the water sector is not responsible for introducing PFAS into water systems. And this means that actually, unfairly, the water utilities and the customers who are paying their bills are having to essentially pay for the cost of the cleanup. So many of the US water utilities are now attempting to recoup costs from the likes of 3M and DuPont to actually reduce the CapEx burden on the companies and the ultimate customer bill.
Welcome to The Green Away. I'm your host, Rose Mary Petrus, Senior Journalist at FS Sustainability. We are recording on Gadigal land and we pay our respects to traditional custodians of country and elders past, present and emerging. In August, it was revealed that PFAS, known as forever chemicals, have been found in water filtration plants and even in platypus livers across New South Wales, which the Australian authorities said were at safe levels of exposure for the population, a level which is considered unsafe by US standards. Here to discuss PFAS is Georgia Hall. Welcome to the show, Georgia.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Georgia is the London-based ESG and Investment Director, Global Listed Infrastructure, with boutique investment manager Maple Brown Abbott, and recently put out a paper outlining the impact of PFAS on water infrastructure investments and what investors can do about it. So, Georgia, let's start off with what is PFAS and why is it so important to address this issue?
As you've already alluded to, by referring to PFAS as forever chemicals, PFAS is a group of 470 virtually indestructible chemicals that have entered global water systems. And PFAS mostly comes from the manufacturing process for things like nonstick cookware, industrial coatings, firefighting foams, and household products. Because they're indestructible, they accumulate in humans and the environment over time, which is why they're commonly referred to as forever chemicals. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, though, drinking water is one of the main sources of PFAS contamination. And high and repeated exposure to PFAS chemicals, say, for instance, through drinking water, can actually lead to serious health issues such as liver damage and even things like thyroid cancer. And to put this into perspective, it's estimated that about half of all tap water in the US contains at least one or more types of PFAS. And around 14% of European teenagers have PFAS in their blood at levels that exceed current health limits. So in terms of where PFAS is manufactured, like the chemical manufacturers such as 3M and DuPont have been involved in manufacturing PFAS since the 1950s. But up until recently, they have been largely unregulated. So this sort of has led to decades of regulatory ambiguity. And then also now, in the past couple of years, as we have seen more certainty on the regulatory front, we are now seeing water utilities needing to manage PFAS levels in drinking water below certain thresholds. And this also requires new capital investments and ongoing maintenance and operating costs. But importantly, I think what's really interesting here is that we tend to find true action on sustainability takes place when there is a strong business case. And so when we see this investment case aligning with the sustainability case, that's when we tend to see action taking place. So in that sense, it's a very welcome development.
And we'll talk a bit about the investment case later in the episode, so stick around for that. Georgia, this all sounds really serious. How do we deal with this issue?
Well, there are two sort of like key ways of dealing with this issue, and I'll start with the most obvious way, which is firstly just the stopping of manufacturing and the use of PFAS chemicals in products full stop. And this would obviously curb the issue at source. So we have seen companies like 3M committing to discontinuing all PFAS manufacturing by the end of 2025. We've also seen on the regulatory front regulators designating certain PFAS chemicals as hazardous, or even imposing bans on the import of PFAS chemicals and products. So this is around actually curbing the issue at source from being introduced into the environment. The second piece around actually dealing with the issue is around limiting PFAS levels in existing water systems. And that's where the water treatment process is so crucial. So current technologies are unfortunately quite limited and costly. Most water utilities tend to use something called granular activated carbon, And without getting all scientific and nerdy on you, it is considered to be the most mature technology to treat PFAS. The activation process makes the carbon sort of more porous and more able to absorb PFAS compounds, even from things like air, and let alone just the water itself. There are some less utilized solutions like ion exchange and ceramic membranes, but they are very, very costly. And there's also this issue of the byproduct of PFAS and what to do with that in terms of disposing of it safely and cost effectively. Unfortunately, for those listeners who are nature and natural capital inclined, nature-based solutions can't be used to remove PFAS from raw water once it's introduced because it is a chemical. Severn Trent, which is a portfolio company that the Globalist and Infrastructure team, a strategy that I work on, Severn Trent is trialing the use of things like UV light on raw water to actually see if it can break down PFAS before it goes through the treatment process. But these are quite nascent technologies that investment is needed to work out how viable it can be at an industrial scale. But irrespective of solutions, water utilities need to make sure that they avoid putting the PFAS back into the environment and also to ensure that the solutions are cost effective so it doesn't materially impact the end customer bill who's paying, you know, the water utility bill.
Wow, there's a lot going on in this space then. You mentioned the regulatory developments. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
The good news is that we are finally seeing regulators taking action on PFAS. And this is happening in various ways, whether that's through limits on drinking water, the phasing out manufacturing of PFAS chemicals, or even, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the banning the import of PFAS chemicals, which we're seeing in some markets or being explored in markets like in the EU or even in New Zealand. The pace and scale of the regulatory action really varies. And to put this into perspective, in the US, for instance, the Environmental Protection Agency is taking a very stringent approach. It has a PFAS strategic roadmap that contains a range of measures, one of which is around the limits for drinking water, requiring water utilities to monitor these current levels and then limit them by 2029. The EPA estimates that up to 10% of the 66,000 public drinking water systems in the US will be affected. But actual other estimates suggest that this will probably reach about 35% by 2030. So you really get a sense of the scale of the investment that's needed here, but also the scale of the level of PFAS in systems and the need to manage them to below regulatory requirements. But also just as an aside on the regulation, there's a lot of litigation going on in the US at the moment that does need some mentioning. The water sector is not responsible for introducing PFAS into water systems. And this means that actually unfairly, the water utilities and the customers who are paying their bills are having to essentially pay for the cost of the cleanup. So many of the US water utilities are now attempting to recoup costs from the likes of 3M and DuPont to actually reduce the CapEx burden on the companies and the ultimate customer bill. So in April this year, we saw 3M settle a $10 to $12.5 billion lawsuit with a group of US water utilities, and that's to compensate them for PFAS contamination and cleanup costs. So that's just an example of where we're actually seeing the litigation helping to manage down the costs in terms of the customer bill. Over in the UK, and I'll just cover this really quickly, the UK has taken a much more precautionary approach compared to the US. There's the Drinking Water Inspectorate has issued guidance, and now the water utilities have to develop PFAS management strategies in their 2025-2030 business plans, but they also have a much clearer mandate to invest in these solutions. The UK doesn't have any PFAS chemicals listed in its water quality regulations, but the key thing with the UK is that we are very likely to see developments on this front for years to come. So two very different levels of speeds of change, so to speak.
Can you tell us about the ESG risk when it comes to PFAS and ESG investing?
The risks are varied. I probably best categorize them as litigation related, reputational, and sort of regulatory risk. So when we talk about ESG risk, this is in the context of the risk to, the single materiality lens. But increased regulation always comes with potential downside risk. So regulations, as they're enforced, assumes that water utilities are compliant. But if they're not compliant, then this could obviously penalize, they could be penalized, or they could be disallowed operating and management costs. And that could negatively impact earnings.
Mm-hmm.
Or at the same time, operational failures to ensure safe drinking water or even compliance with wastewater treatment standards could also lead to financial risks for companies. So that's that regulatory downside here as well. There's also some litigation risk for the water utilities themselves. So I've talked about how the water utilities are pursuing litigation against the chemical manufacturers. But in the US, we have seen some litigation against the water utilities. So Connecticut Water Company, a subsidiary of San Jose Water Group, is facing a class action from some water customers who argue that the utility knowingly supplied water that exceeded the state's recommended PFAS limits that predated the EPA requirements. However, the key piece here is really the question of causation. And because the water utilities themselves are fundamentally not responsible for contamination at source, that is one of the key questions. But if they didn't comply with state requirements, then of course that opens the door to potential litigation there, understandably so. So there are some downsides here on the ESG front.
What's the investment case for managing PFAS levels in drinking water? What's the return on investment look like?
So overall, this is a net positive for the water sector because PFAS CapEx is incremental to ongoing capital expenditure on networks. And utilities will see a faster rate-based growth as a result of these new investments. And these new investments, they can get a regulated return on and are also remunerated in line with other network spending. And faster rate-based growth means faster EPS growth.
Mm-hmm.
And secondary to that, better water quality also means more satisfied customers and a more willingness to pay and at the same time, less political risk. And so it's quite hard to price the return on avoiding political risk. It's one of those intangible measures that is incredibly important but can't be specifically quantified. But in terms of the return on investment in the US, we know that the EPA regulations are much more stringent than the UK. This has translated to much larger investment needs with the US water utilities. So American Water Works anticipates $1 billion of CapEx investments will be needed over the next 4 years, specifically for PFAS. In the UK, this is much smaller. Severn Trent anticipates $56 million in sterling of CapEx investments over the next 5 years. But this is just for two sites, which is quite amazing, really, that amount of money would be needed just simply for two sites. The one thing that's also worth noting here is that the US water system is highly fragmented, and there has been a big consolidation and rationalization of the water sector in the recent years because municipally owned systems are small and it makes it very hard for them to keep up with these large capital expenditures. So the additional PFAS requirements could actually spur further mergers and acquisitions activity in the water sector in the US, which is a really interesting dynamic as well that sort of feeds into this. But overall, I think these are modest investments that we're only just starting to see sort of developments on, and we can definitely expect to see more to come on this issue globally for the short to medium term.
Georgia Hold, thank you so much for joining us today. Where can listeners find out more about this important work with ESG and PFAS?
Well, we have a short and a long form white paper that's available on the Maple Brown Abbott website under our insights page. So please do read that and get in touch if there are any questions.
Until next time then, I'm Rosemary Petrus, and thank you for listening to The Green Away.
The Green Away podcast is a product of FS Sustainability, a show about people, the planet, and investing in our collective future. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. The Greener Way podcast gives listeners access to information and educational content provided by discussing numerous financial sustainable options and our featured guests. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of The Greener Way are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the FS Sustainability website, fssustainability.com.au.